Administration and Operations Committee. The time is 9 o'clock. Jan, could I please have a roll call?
Yes, Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Quorum?
Our first item, item one, is the election of the Vice Chair of the Administration and Operations Committee. So I will start with a call for nominations. So are there any nominations for Vice Chair of the Administration and Operations Committee?
Mr. Helling, I'll nominate Mr. McLean for Vice Chair.
Okay. I will ask two more times for any nominations. So are there any nominations for Vice Chair of the A&O Committee? Are there any other nominations for Vice Chair of the A&O Committee? Okay, hearing none, that makes Mr. DeClean the Vice Chair of the A&O Committee. Congratulations, Mr. DeClean. If you'd like to say any words, feel free. Otherwise, we can move on to the next item.
No, that's okay. Thank you. I'll accept.
Great. Thank you. Item number two, approval of closeout of the 2025 budget. We'll be hearing from Dan on this one.
Yep. This is Dan Gopal, ERS Chief Financial Officer. In the packet, you have a memo from me to Patrick, just going over the 25 expenses and budget. A little background on how ERS's administrative expenses work. Right now, we have an interagency agreement with the City of Milwaukee. What that says is that essentially the comptroller pays all of our administrative expenses. That includes payroll, any invoices that we receive in our office. We send those over to the comptroller for approval, then it goes to the treasurer's office for payout. I think this is a really good agreement. It gives us an extra layer of oversight on our expenses. It gives the city a little peek into what we're doing over here at ERS, and hopefully it strengthens our relationship with the city. Yeah, so, and the way it works is the comptroller pays our bills, you know, as they come in, and send them the invoices, and then every month we reimburse the city for our expenses that accrued to date. So every month we're making a payment to the city to reimburse for those expenses. And what this memo from me to Patrick says is essentially it's a reconciliation of all our expenses, what we paid to the city, and any balance due. For 2025, our total budget was $24,526,723. Of that, ERS spent $20,347,415.54. So we were under budget. Of that $20 million, we identified $694,375.08 of non-trust expenses. Those are expenses that aren't attributable to the ERS. That would be like for any expenses related to WRS, our group life or retiree health, things that aren't related to the ERS essentially. And so we only reimburse the city just for ERS's only costs. So the final reimbursement, the final ERS expenses were $19,653,040.46. We previously advanced the city $18,635,000. That leaves us an outstanding balance of $1,018,040.46. So we're just looking to get an approval for that final payment to finish out 25. Any questions about the memo?
Thank you, Dan. Questions from committee members? Hearing none, I just have one question just to the the variances from budget to actual. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about the two largest. We see a pretty large variance of, you know, coming in below budget in professional services and other operating services. I wonder if you could speak to that a little
bit. Yeah, I'll talk about it. One area that we were over budget was general office. We were over budget by about $23,000 or so. That was a result of higher than expected post office payments. We had two elections and the rates increased, and so it was a little higher than what we projected. Going down to professional services, that $2.4 million, that essentially is, we projected our investment manager fees to be higher than what they actually came in at, and so that's the main variance there. Other operating services, that could be just that we didn't spend as much on IT projects as we expected. We're going to carry over some of our unspent IT budget over into 2026, I think about $500,000 or so, because we're in the midst of upgrading our network drive and everything, so it's taking a little longer with supply chain issues. And that's a similar thing for equipment as well. So those are probably the biggest. Our fringe rate was smaller than expected, but we don't really have much control over that. That's set by the city based upon their fringe expenses.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Do I hear a motion for this file?
I have a motion approval.
Thank you, Tim.
Declan, I'll second.
Thank you, Justin. Item number two is approved. Item number three, approval of change of vendor for the Retired Public Safety Officer Insurance Premium Deduction Program. I believe Pat was going to speak on this.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. Staff is asking the committee to approve a change to the third-party administrator for the Retired Public Safety Officer Insurance Deduction Program. There's a memo in the file, but some brief background on this program. In 2006, the federal government passed the Pension Protection Act, which allowed defined benefit plans to deduct certain insurance premiums from retiree benefits, public safety officer retiree benefits. In 2007, the Common Council amended Chapter 36 to allow ERS to implement this plan, but granted the board rulemaking authority over the process. The board responded by creating Rule 19H, which requires that the Administration and Operations Committee and the board play a process in approving both insurance carriers and third-party administrators who wish to enroll ERS retirees in this insurance coverage. The process, a brief overview of the process is that the executive director must determine whether any third-party administrator or insurance carrier who's seeking to participate in the program meets certain criteria that are created under the rule. If the executive director makes that determination, they are required to present the request to the Administration and Operations Committee. The A&O Committee then approves the executive director effectively releasing member information to the third-party administrator and insurance carrier. And if this is the first time that any organization is applying, that organization then must show that they have been able to enroll or have gotten the interest of at least 5% of the eligible members. And if that's the case, then the board is allowed to permit the carrier and third-party administrator to participate in the program. In 2013, the board approved the current insurance carrier, MetLife, for participation, and at the time approved a company called Source One as the third-party administrator. The way this works is that Source One provides enrollment and disenrollment information to the ERS, essentially a file of participating members each month. ERS then deducts the required premiums from for those members and transfers them directly to MetLife. The reason this item is before the committee today is that in February, Source One was acquired by Gallagher Benefits and can no longer serve as third-party administrator. The longtime owner, I believe. Is Jack Burns the owner?
The VP.
Okay. Of Source One created a new entity, Haymarket Specialty Benefits, in order to continue providing third-party administrator services to ERS members under this program, essentially so that the program could continue in its current form, just with a different organization serving as third-party administrator. Haymarket is now requesting to take over that third-party administrator role, and staff recommends that the committee approve the request. So jumping into the technical details, there are four criteria that and Terry's got it up on the screen there, that any third-party administrator or insurance carrier has to meet in order to qualify for participation in the program. We have determined that Haymarket does meet this criteria. Just run through them very briefly. First, while Haymarket is a new entity, its leadership and key staff has been are essentially the same as Source One, which has provided third-party administrator services since 2013, so meeting that five-year threshold. In other words, this change is really a name change, really form over function. We're essentially having the same people performing the same services. Second, there's no indication that Haymarket is insolvent. Third, Haymarket has not been rated by the Better Business Bureau, so that factor does not technically apply. And then fourth and finally, there's no indication that a principal of Haymarket has committed fraud or dishonesty. Based on these factors, staff recommends approval of Haymarket's request. If the committee approves the request, it will go to the board next week for final approval. However, something that's important to note, in order to ensure that there's no interruption of payment of insurance premiums for members who participate in this program, ERS would run the same enrollment file as last month, just to make sure that we're not creating a gap in premium payments. And then the only other thing I would like to note is that if the committee and board approve the change, that we would send out a letter to all program participants just noting the change in third-party administrator, although there'll be no practical effect for anybody. The benefits and premium payments will continue essentially as they have been since 2013. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to take them, but staff recommends approval of this item.
Thank you, Pat. Any questions from committee members? Hearing none, I will seek a motion for approval.
Thanks for the motion. Helling second.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Tim. The item is approved.
Do you want to call for objections just to make sure there's...
Any yeah. Objections? Hearing none, the item is approved. Thank you, Pat.
Yep.
Next item, number four, I believe is a closed session item. This is to consider, discuss, and potentially approve recommendation regarding the results of RFQ for actuary. So I believe we're going to need first a roll call to go into closed
motion.
Session.
Motion.
I'm sorry. First, I'll entertain a motion to go into closed session. I'll make that motion. Do I have a second?
Helling, second.
Thank you, Tim.
And roll call, Mr. DeClean?
Aye.
Mr. Helling?
Aye.
Mr. Christensen?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
The time is 9:14 a.m.
Thanks.
As provided in Section 1985-1E, Wisconsin statutes, for deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session, the committee may then vote to reconvene an open session following the closed session.
Go ahead.
Okay, the time is 9:22. We are back in open session. We are on item four, consider, discuss, and potentially approve recommendation regarding the results of RFQ for actuary. I am seeking a motion for approval.
Ellen will make that motion.
And I will second. And do I hear any objections? Hearing none, the item is approved. Thank you. Item number five, IT projects portfolio.
Mr. Chair, we should have our Chief Technology Officer, Jeff Schober, on the line. Jeff, are you there?
Yes, sir.
He said yes.
Oh, okay.
Jeff, barely hear you.
Yeah, you're coming in real soft.
Real soft?
Yeah, quiet. Okay.
Sure. No problem.
Apologize for that.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning, Jeff.
UPC, you know how that works, right?
Yeah.
Damn technology people. All right, so this is our typical bulleted list we present every month. The one I wanted to point out to you is the network redesign, which is in progress. As of yesterday, all of the new hardware is in place. This was an out-of-cycle upgrade that we did. We had some funding we wanted to apply to this. What it's done for us is a couple things. Newest technology from Cisco. It's going to help us do some internal segmentation of our network so that should a hacker get in, they can't just wander around inside the network if they're in. So that's an important piece of security. The other thing that this will do for us, excuse me, I ran down here literally. The other thing that this will do for us is, given all the heightened headlines in the Middle East, we're seeing a large increase in external hacking attempts, and this new hardware is going to allow us to do a thing called geofencing. So we are going to set it up so we will take no connection attempts from anything outside the United States in India. And that will be it'll actually drop our ability for hackers to get in tremendously for us. So it's a new feature of the new hardware we bought, and we'll be putting that in the next couple weeks. So that will drop our that threat will almost go away. So that's a big deal for us. So although our security has been really good since I got here for the last 6 years, we're going to make it exponentially better. So that's an important thing for the fund, obviously. Nothing else in particular on this. Most of the rest of this is just normal upgrade type of activity. So if we can go to the next slide. There, class piece. So this is a lot of the same information and a lot of historical information as we do color code this. Everything we're doing is in the green, so we keep track of all that as far as we are doing what we said we're going to do, when we said we're going to do it. And everything's in the green as of right now. So IT's happy. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Any questions from committee members? I just have one question, I guess, on the system that restricts the ability to access the network from outside of the U.S. or India. Is there ever a legitimate reason for somebody in one of those countries to access the system? And if so, can it be allowed on a one-off basis?
Yes. We can allow it on a one-off basis, but really we would see no reason. They would actually contact us then, saying they can't connect, and then we would fix it for them.
Okay, it doesn't permanently block it off.
No, it just makes it. So it just any connection it would see coming from, say, Brazil, it just won't accept that connection.
Sure.
So it knows IP addresses are very specific to. I mean, everything in this room that has is electronic has an IP address. We can tell where it's coming from. So we would just not accept any of those connection attempts that are based outside the United States or outside of India. So we have staff in India doing offshore programming.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What if they use a VPN?
So we can, we will block that as well, although VPNs typically will allow those on a per
per-person basis, so everyone, actually, all of our remote access, as you know, most of, a lot of people work from home, they all have that capability. Those all come in via VPNs. They are brought in, we validate that they come in, we use multi-factor authentication so that we know who says that they are who they say they are before we allow the connection to happen. So that's about as secure as you can possibly get. So it's kind of like when you do your banking and they ask you, they send you a code, make sure you are who you say you are. And that's basically gets rid of any bad actors trying to get in. So we're very meticulous around that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, this is not an approval item.
I believe, right? This is informational only.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jeff. Moving on to item number 6, organizational and personnel update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another informational item. We really only have one vacant position that we're currently trying to fill, a benefits services specialist. As I think Jerry's been mentioning over the past, at the end of 2025, and I've been mentioning over the past several months, we are in a daisy chain of promotions, which I think is a good thing. It shows both that people want to stay at ERS and that we're preserving that institutional knowledge. And I've been impressed, I'll just say, you know, having gotten to know people's work history here, that a lot of the staff, a significant portion of the staff, started in one position and has now worked in two or three positions, moving their way up in the organization. So it's really outstanding to see the fact that we have employees who have familiarity with multiple different sections within the office, a lot of, you know, sort of cross-organizational knowledge is present here, and I think that's outstanding. I've been very, very impressed with it. So just to give everyone kind of an idea of how we got here, as a reminder, Katrina Bailey was promoted to the new position of HR administrator in the middle of last year. Michelle Carr was then promoted to the lead disability specialist position in October, to fill the position vacated by Katrina. And then relatively recently, Latoya Johnson was promoted to the disability specialist senior position in December that was vacated by Michelle. And so we're now seeking to fill Latoya's position, and after that, I think we'll be up to date.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Any questions from committee members? Well, hearing none, I will seek a motion to adjourn.
I think we'll make the motion to adjourn.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Tim. Any objections? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Care. Have a good weekend, everyone.